Hey, we're all looking to save, especially on medical bills, but where do you start? Now, unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings, well, it can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance, and they flag errors like overbilling or wrong codes and fraud. And you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, saving starts with knowing where to look. Go to their website. It's healthlock.com today before you see any other healthcare provider. Hey, what if your home's title, which is the legal document that proves you own your home, is in some criminal's name? Well, that's called home title theft, and criminals all over the world can find your home's title online, and then they'll forge your signature, they'll take out loans against your home, or even worse, sell your home. Now, how do you know some criminal's not taking over the title to your home? You can find out with sign up at HomeTitleLock.com and use the promo code Sean, S-E-A-N. Are you being influenced? Well, if you watched a blockbuster film in the last decade, well, then there's a chance it has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Now, here's the reality. The CCP may be running the largest influence campaign in history. Now, in Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, well, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP exerts control over some major studios. Don't miss the most important documentary about Hollywood yet. And for a limited time, you can watch the first 10 minutes for free when you go to the website HollywoodTakeover.com/Sean, S-E-A-N.
Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. You know, Valentine's Day is about capturing the wow factor. And the best way to do that is with 1-800-Flowers.com. And right now, you can order 18 enchanted roses for only $29.99. That's a 45% discount. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity.
Glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. We have new poll numbers. Yes, a majority, a huge majority of Americans support the Muslim ban, the temporary 90-day refugee pause. Oh, my gosh. You would think Kellyanne Conway committed the greatest crime of the century. We'll get to that today. Also, Democrats now recognize they can't win. And they're scrapping their all-night protests. Bill Kristol has totally lost it and gone off the deep end, saying that lazy, white, working class should be replaced by new Americans. Really? What is a new America? What, we just replace them? You're going to speak in such broad and general and myopic terms because Bill is bitter that he was so wrong on Donald Trump? Pretty pathetic. And we'll get to all of that today and so much more that we have to touch on today. What you heard there is police now had to make several arrests. This was in Phoenix today. As protesters were blocking law enforcement officials from leaving a U.S. immigration office in Phoenix, fearing that a mother of two was headed for deportation. Now, the protests surging at the Immigration Customs Enforcement facility, the ICE facility, after Guadalupe Garcia de Reyes was taken into custody during a routine check-in with the agency. Activists said it was an attempt by President Donald Trump's administration to deport immigrants living in the country illegally who had previously not been a priority for deportation under the Obama administration. Fearing the 36-year-old woman may return to Mexico, her home country, dozens of immigration radical activists blocked the gates, surrounded the office near central Phoenix in what the Arizona Republic said was an effort to stop police vans and a bus from leaving. And the protesters were saying that Garcia de Reyes was in one of the vehicles which were used to transport people in ICE custody to detention centers or to Arizona's border with Mexico for full deportation. And a Republic photo identified a woman looking through the glass of one of the vehicles and identified it as her. Now, police, meanwhile, had to take positions around the building, confronted by demonstrators who are chanting justice, 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 in both English and Spanish, and you heard all of that there. Now, they were initially successful in stopping the vehicles. You know, you have people, we are living in a new era now where there's a war on immigrants, said the lawyer for Reyes, and told the New York Times after leaving the immigration building. This group, Puente Arizona, an immigration advocacy group, said Garcia de Reyes came to the U.S. as a 14-year-old, has two children. She was arrested on Wednesday while reporting to ICE, an annual requirement. Now, what they're not telling you is here, well, why did they arrest this woman? What did she do? You know, why did this happen? You know, is it just because Donald Trump wants to round up immigrants? Is that the whole reason for the arrest? Is that the reason for the protest? Or could it be that she did something else? Well, it turns out that, according to the Associated Press, the woman was convicted of identity theft. So she didn't respect American law. She didn't respect American sovereignty. She entered the country illegally. And then she was found guilty and convicted of identity theft. Now, I don't know how many of you know people that have been victims of identity theft. One of the reasons LifeLock.com is such an important sponsor to this program, and we're so honored to partner with them, is because they provide a service that is needed now more than ever, because identity theft is, and I don't say it just because I like to read it, it's the fastest growing crime in the country. And I know people whose lives have almost been turned upside down and ruined, and years of their life spent trying to undo the damage of these identity thieves. And what they do is they basically get your information, they pretend that they're you, they rip off your retirement funds, they rip off your bank accounts, they can rob you blind, they can literally spend money, open credit card accounts, there's all sorts of schemes, take your tax refunds, and make your life a living hell. And your name and reputation are literally shot. In other words, she didn't care about the country that wasn't deporting her. She didn't want to come here and be a law-abiding citizen. And whoever she was found guilty of this identity theft, I guarantee you their life became, for at least a period of time, a living hell. Because now think about this. Let's say it's your credit card that they open in your name. Then now the credit card companies are after you. And now, by the way, your credit score goes down the tubes, your credit rating. Now you can't even get a credit card. And maybe they get into your retirement account. Maybe you've saved your entire life and you're ready to retire. And all that money that you've been putting away and counting on for your older years is gone. Or maybe it's your bank account. Every penny that you have worked hard and saved your entire life is gone. Because that's what identity thieves do. They rob you blind without any consideration for you whatsoever. And the question here is, you know, now I'm looking at the polls. Most Americans want the border secure. Most Americans believe in Donald Trump. There was a McLaughlin and Associates poll. 57% support Trump's 90-day refugee pause from failed Middle Eastern countries that are either safe havens for terror, training grounds for terrorists, or have many known terrorists within the country that may want to come to America and bring harm to you, the American people.
And Donald Trump, your president, doesn't want to gamble with your life like Democrats want to. And he's willing to inconvenience a few people for the safety of the American people, which he is charged to uphold and as commander in chief and keep us as safe as possible, which is impossible at times. So my question here is, what is all this about? You got guys literally putting their legs underneath police cars, protester locking himself to a van carrying this woman that is stopped by protest. You know, do any of these people protesting care about the victims of her crime in the AP article? Do any of them care about the misery and the suffering that goes along with identity theft? Let me tell you, I know people that have had their credit rating destroyed, have been ripped off, have had to fight credit card companies, banks, and even their retirement plans for years. It takes years in some cases to fix the damage that is done by identity theft. And by the way, all the rest of us now are inconvenienced also. You know, I was in Houston at the Super Bowl. You know, I didn't stay for the Super Bowl, but I was there broadcasting Friday and I was there Saturday. And I took money out of a bank twice. And every time, you know, I have Chase Bank, whatever bank, Citibank, any bank account you have. Anytime you take money out of your bank account, it's like you better tell your bank when they write you that, yes, it's you, or else you can't take any money out. They lock up your card. So now I'm inconvenienced. Then my phone's ringing. Then I got to talk to an operator. Then I got to text back one for yes, two for no. And then I'm wondering, is this some kind of phishing scheme? It's just unbelievable, the damage and the wreckage of this. So you know what? She's convicted of identity theft, didn't respect our laws and sovereignty. Now, the argument is, well, what about the children? She has children, Mr. Hannity. She has children. I love children, too. I really do. Well, if she cared, you know, you're asking the American people to care more about her children than she does. Because if she cared about her kids, she wouldn't have done this. Think about it. It's ridiculous. By the way, breaking news, Sounder, if you may, Jason. This is huge. You would think this is going to end the world as we know it. And this just
breaking
broke.
Breaking news now.
Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne Conway. She went on TV this morning. And you know, of course, what had happened, the boycott of Ivanka Trump and Ivanka Trump merchandise at Nordstrom's. And they're discontinuing stocking her clothing. And I have an inside source at Nordstrom that pointed out to me that one of their higher ranking executives actually tweeted something out that it was and clearly was a political decision. And an insider within Nordstrom told me it was totally political and that they purposely did this because they don't like Donald Trump. So Kellyanne is friends with Ivanka. I'm friends with Ivanka. And then she went and she stood up for her friend. And anyway, she, you know, said, well, I'm going to give a free commercial. She said, go buy it today. Well, now you would now saying go buy it today. All right. She's sticking up for her friend and the daughter of the president, because the daughter of the president, just like the 10-year-old son of the president, has been they've been unrelenting in their attacks against the kids, against Ivanka, you know, poor Eric Trump, who raised tens of millions of dollars for a great cause, had to put his charity down because it might be a conflict of interest. So millions of dollars for charity and cancer are not going to be raised. Yeah, these laws are really smart. And quote, well, she may have violated the federal ban of employees from using their public office to endorse products regulation state. Oh, okay, what are we going to handcuff Kellyanne now for supporting her friend? And really, this is big news for cable today? That's the same people that ignored the corruption of Hillary, the Clinton Foundation, the quid pro quos, the pay to plays. You know, this is ridiculous. It's just like what we've been watching on display is a bunch of crybabies on the left. And after Betsy DeVos and now Attorney General Sessions have won, now the Democrats are going to scrap their all-night protest. You know why? Because they got their asses kicked and they lost and it's done nothing. And it's not going to do anything in the future, too. And Neil Gorsuch, they're going to lose that one as well. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN, a toll-free telephone number. We have a lot of other news we'll get to today. Also, the very latest on the battle over extreme vetting.
Now that Uncle Joe has left the building, maybe we can get back to bringing jobs home. That's Jobs, J-O-B-S. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
You know, Valentine's Day is all about capturing the wow factor that leaves a lasting impression. You know, for all the women in your life, all the women in my life, they still talk about all the gorgeous 1-800-Flowers.com bouquets I've sent over the years. 1-800-Flowers.com has a wide selection of beautiful rose bouquets and arrangements. And the best part, they start at just $29.99. With a radiant mix of red and pink and hot pink roses, well, this enchanted bouquet is guaranteed to wow the women in your life. 1-800-Flowers makes these exclusive offers to you just for listening to this show. And today's offer is 18 enchanted roses for only $29.99. Now, that's a 45% discount, only available while supplies last. Now, to get an amazing Valentine's Day deal, 18 enchanted roses for $29.99, just go to 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. 1-800-Flowers.com/Hannity. Why wait to wow the women you love in your life? Order right now. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941. Sean, this is great news. I'll tell you one thing that you know is building and building and building and building. I spent a lot of time writing today. And I will unload tonight on television on the Republican Party. And the reason is number one, my interests and my desires. I don't support the personality of people for office as much as I do. What is their agenda? What are they going to do? How are they going to make the lives of the American people who they're supposed to serve better? And, you know, I'm watching Donald Trump, and I've ticked off many times on this program all the things that he's accomplished in such a short period of time. And he's trying to move quickly and trying to get his health care repeal and replace plan down. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, these guys are with their long lunches and long vacations. You know, they're talking about the economic recovery plan in the spring. Can't we do it in the winter when when it's snowing outside? Can't we do it, you know, faster than this? Why are you so ill-prepared? I don't understand it. These politicians are pathetic. What about the people on food stamps, out of the labor force, in poverty? That's what this election was about. You know, stop the delay. Write the bill. Pass the bill. You know, look at Trump's agenda today. He's meeting with corporations. We'll get to this later in the program. And he's saying, come on in, guys. Oh, denouncing Intel, another $7 billion they're going to invest in Arizona. And they're talking about the spring and maybe the end of the year to repeal and replace Obamacare. No, I want you to get it right. I don't want you to rush it. But I would think after 7-8 years of saying you're going to repeal and replace something, you would have built a consensus plan that was ready to go. What have you been doing for 8 years? It's not something that I comprehend. It's not. You know, my team and I have been discussing this. If nobody in that I'm looking at now, sweet baby James, Linda, Lauren, Ethan, Jason, nobody goes out for lunch any day. And if they did, they'd be fired. I mean, if something happens, if you're sick, is there anybody, Linda, more generous if somebody's sick? What do I say? Stay home, right? If you're sick, absolutely. If you have a family issue, if your cat dies, stay home. Seriously.
Absolutely.
You know, but when you're here, what do I expect? If you ever went out for lunch, I'd be shocked. Have you ever?
I was actually
going
to ask. I'm
years?
Actually really hungry. I need to go right now. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. Go in the middle of the show.
Super hungry.
What the hell is wrong with these people? I am going to unload on them tonight at 10 Eastern on Fox. It's just time to do it. Nobody else is gonna. I will, because my fidelity and truth is to you. The agenda is about you. Fixing the country is about you. I bet all of you are as frustrated as I am. I bet, because I know that all of us combined, you look at your daily, let's say you're a stay-at-home mom and you have kids. Okay, what is your day like? All right, you're up at 6, you race to the kitchen, you make the lunch, or you get the stuff, and you make sure they have the books, you make sure they did their homework, you make sure the dog didn't eat the homework, you maybe
push out a cup of coffee in your Keurig or whatever machine you have, and you shovel some coffee down your throat, and you're off, and you're gone all day. You know, that's one of, if not the hardest job in the world, right? And then you got to take your kids to whatever activities they have. Then you got to watch and sit over them doing their stupid homework. And then you got to try and rack your brain and remember stuff that they're never going to use in their life anyway. Then you got to learn all about world history before they become a senior and they might get American history. I mean, it's just never ending, the job of as a parent. I mean, it's just, it's mind-numbing how hard people work. Now, let's say you work in business. Okay, you're in a competitive environment. You've got people breathing down your neck. You got deadlines you got to meet. You got meetings you got to attend. You got new business you got to bring into your place of work. And you never stop. I mean, at least that's the people that I know. That's what my life is like. That's what my life has always been like. You know, a lawyer, you know, your first year out of law school. Every lawyer I've ever known, except my buddy John Gomez, who found a way, his entire life he's been able to find a way to sort of just find a niche that nobody else has and make his life work for him. And I give him a hard time all the time about it, because he's been able to do this and thread this needle his entire life, but he still works hard. Don't get me wrong. But I don't care what. If you're a contractor, you're under pressure all the time to keep new business coming in. Get the work done properly, on time, on budget, and pay your employees, and then deal with all the regulations of the government, and then take out FICA taxes and this tax and that tax. If you're a doctor, you know, my doctor friends, they work their asses off. You know, I know one of my doctor friends sees 50 people a day. I mean, he's racing from one room to another all over the place and sending this one for that test, this one for this test, this one for this test. Uh-oh, we got to take this guy to the hospital now, and then the whole day is shot. Because he's saving people's lives, and they get paid a fraction of what they deserve, considering their 4 years of college, 3 to 4 years of medical school, their residency, their internship. And then by the time they want to open up an office someplace, you know what, then the insurance company say, well, you'll get $20 a visit. It's impossible. And then you have student loans that you're paying off till you're 50. This is what life is. Life is hard. I'll never forget the road less traveled. Life is difficult. You got to recognize that truth. Nothing worthwhile in life comes easily to anybody. Everybody's got to take risks. The only people that I know that have the best life, and they're going to deny it. Well, Hannity, we've got security issues. I was reading about some representatives, congressmen and women are upset that, you know, they're being protested at town halls and they have safety issues. And by the way, we've got to keep our elected officials safe. And there are lunatics out there. And I'm like, okay, I've dealt with that my entire career. I mean, seriously. And it's part of the job if you're a public figure. Unfortunately, it's a sad, sick, evil world out there. And you need to take all the precautions. But I'm thinking, okay, how many vacation days do these people get? Seriously. A whole lot. Most of them have safe seats because of gerrymandering and the collusion and corruption between Democrats and Republicans. Okay, we'll give you this predominantly Democratic district. You give us this predominantly Republican district, and you can't get rid of any of these people because so often just name recognition gets them reelected. Doesn't mean they're doing a good job. You know, that's why the case of Eric Cantor being defeated by Dave Brat was such a big issue. Or in the case of, there have been a few other high profile cases where prominent elected officials, you know, I think back, and what is so infuriating to me is I'm just looking at my simple life and my world. And in my world, in my life, which so many of you share the exact same experience, in my parents' life and your parents' lives, in my grandparents' lives and your grandparents' lives. My grandparents came here with nothing, $10, $15, in one case, $25 in their pocket. They had no friends. They lived in horrible conditions, and they worked 16 hours a day. And then, of course, my father lived through the Depression. My mother lived through the Depression, and that really sucked, too, for them. And both of them grew up pretty poor, especially my father was ridiculously poor, and his mom died 3 months after he was born, complications due to his birth, and then so he was shuffled around from family member to family member, but it never stopped his work ethic. And my father, you know, would work, and then on weekends he worked at Carl Hoppel's as a waiter. And I'm 8 years old, and I'm delivering papers, and that's how I got my money. And I'm 12 years old at the Norwood Inn in West Hempstead, New York, by this little pond. I'm next to a Carvel. I wash dishes every Friday, Saturday night, and Sunday. And I did that for over a year until one day, one Thanksgiving, the cook walked out and he said, "All right, kid, you're the late night chef." I'm 13 years old. And I'm making, you know, stuffed shrimp and stuffed lobster and hamburgers and steaks and french fries. And I'm working like a lunatic because the place was always busy. And, you know, I'd get my St. Pauli girl and I'd go home happy as a pig in mud. But I never stopped moving, washing dishes. I mean, there was no dishwashing machine. I did it all by hand. When I cooked, you know, it was run, run, sweat, and run. I love the sweat of being a chef or a cook. I was really more of a cook than a chef. But I learned how to do shrimp scampi, fettuccine, Alfredo, and stuffed lobsters, cooking live lobsters, you know, things that a 13-year-old kid never gets to learn. And I got pretty good at it. And then bussing tables. I remember working at the Merry Peddler. When I was, 14, 15 years old, I remember running through the dining room the whole night. The entire night, I'd run through the dining room and cleaning the tables and flipping over the tables. There was a Newsday critic, a restaurant critic, that gave it she once said it was a restaurant I'd like to own. And after that, the place was swamped with people outside the door the entire night. And I'd get there Friday night at 6 o'clock, and I didn't stop moving until 4 o'clock in the morning. Because it also had a bar component to the place. It was a pub. And then I became a bartender. And on a busy night, you get in at 6, and I'm making by hand every banana daiquiri, every strawberry daiquiri, every pina colada. They didn't have machines, margarita, all by hand. And literally, you got a service bar for an entire restaurant, and you've got a full bar, 3 or 4 people deep. You move your ass. There's no time to sit around. When I was a contractor, and I was a painting contractor, all right, I had to get this house painted by X date or I'm losing money because I had some people working for me and I'm 20 years old. I was a full-time contractor. And then my buddy Andy Feehan taught me how to hang wallpaper. And then I became a pretty good wallpaper hanger, not like him, but pretty good. And then I'd have to do a bathroom in X hours where I'm losing money. I didn't have time to sit around and eat lunch and go to dinners. You know, now occasionally I'll go to dinner, but I mean, I don't even want to. I'm so tired from working half the time. And what's my point in saying all of this? Or when I'm laying tile, you know how hard it is to lay individual tiles and to float a floor and to float a bathroom to get it just so perfect so it lays down perfectly flat and looks perfect and you design it perfectly so you don't have a little piece in the corner, but you have it balanced out across the entire either shower or bathroom, wherever you happen to be doing it. It's a lot of work. You got to move. There was never any time for lunches. And so I'm looking at Republicans and I'm looking, okay, 8 years ago, they started the promise we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And it's 8 years later. Well, we have 9 plans and we're working within the system of getting another plan. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm frustrated. Who works like this? Who lives like this? All of you imagine in your own lives, I bet you every single one of you listening to my voice right now identifies with how I work, identifies how Jason works and Sweet Baby James works and Linda and Lauren and Ethan and everybody on my TV show. This is not reality for us that 8 years later you don't have a plan. You got to be kidding me. There's no excuse for this. And then we've got a president. It's so refreshing, isn't it? And by the way, Donald Trump does something wrong. We'll call out Donald Trump and say, wait a minute, that wasn't your promise. But so far, we haven't had to. He's moving at the speed of Trump, which is like an executive who's serving the American people, ticking off his promises, checking them off his list, and he wants to move. And then you have the obstructionist Democratic Party. They're harassing him. They won't even give him his cabinet. We still don't have a Health and Human Services Secretary. It took till yesterday to get Attorney General Sessions in place, and which I think complicated the issue out of the Ninth Circuit, but that's a different story we'll get to later in the program. But, you know, in a short period of time, he eased the burden of the Obamacare regulations, and he's moving to repeal and replace, but he said he wants to get it right. Now, he hasn't been there for 8 years like these other people who should have had the bill written, ready to go. because that was their promise for so many years. You know, he got us out of TPP, which he promised. He took actions to freeze regulations, and he's wiping out regulations day by day. And he wants to get rid of 75% because it's stifling business growth in this country. He put in a government hiring freeze, a promise. He went forward with no federal funds for abortions abroad. He had five executive actions to move Keystone and the Dakota Access Pipelines, issued executive actions on construction. Now the border wall is being designed. He's moving his ass because he builds buildings, and you don't have time in the real world to sit around and eat lunch and talk about whatever. And then we know he's pushing another promise of extreme vetting. That's to keep you safe and not gamble with your life like Democrats are willing to do. He's issued an executive action to rebuild the military, which we desperately need. He promised that he would defeat ISIS. So within 30 days, within the first 2 days of his administration, he issued an executive action. He wanted a plan on his desk in 30 days to defeat ISIS. 30 days. It'll be on his desk in about 7 days. He instituted a 5-year lobbying ban for the administration officials, which is to drain the swamp. He doesn't want these guys all capitalizing on their service to their country. And then he followed through on one of the biggest promises, which is putting an originalist, Neil Gorsuch, nominating him for the Supreme Court. And I'm being told, well, we'll get to the economy maybe in the spring or fall. I'm like, I can't take it. It's not how I roll. If the election is, as I said, that this election was about the forgotten man, forgotten woman in this country, if I'm right about that, what good are we doing? What good are these public service people doing if they literally are waiting to next year or the fall or early summer to get a budget done that is going to get rid of regulations, lower the corporate tax rate to 15%, go 7 brackets to 3 brackets. What's so freaking hard about this? To allow multinational corporations to repatriate not billions, but trillions that they'll invest in the country, maybe further incentivize them so they invest in Detroit and Milwaukee and Cleveland and Philly, the cities that need it the most, that have been hurt the most under the Obama years. What's so hard about that? Why does this have to take all these months when you can do it now? You know, finally, we've got an education secretary. Maybe she'll move forward with choice in education for people. And then, of course, the wall is being designed. Thankfully, promises made, promises kept. And I'm just wondering, I just don't understand it. I don't have the patience. There's not one of these people that could work for me and survive. Linda, am I right about this? Just tell people. Could any of these people in Washington survive working on this show?
No.
Not one. Well, Louie Gohmert could.
I would say that's the 30 true. Members of the Freedom
I'd say
Caucus,
the, I'd say
maybe.
The Freedom Caucus guys. They're the only guys that want to move. They're the only ones that have our sense of urgency. The only ones that I know. And all I'm saying is, do the job. You're supposed to be public servants. Get off your ass. Get off your backside. And get to work. And start moving, not at the speed of Washington, but at the speed of Trump. Going to have a lot more about this tonight in my opening monologue on Hannity, 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel.
Term limits.
Yeah, term limits would help, too. Maybe, you know, could you imagine me in the Congress? I'd be screaming every day.
I would actually like to see you battle with Senator Warren. I think that would be really interesting.
I wouldn't have time for her. I would ignore everything she says and does. Who has time for that crap? All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special 4-pack. Now you get 40% off 2 MyPillow premiums and 2 Go Anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special 4-pack offer. You get 2 MyPillow premium pillows and 2 Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve.
MyPillow.com. Promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
The court finds that for purposes of the entry of the temporary restraining order, that the state has met its burden of demonstrating that it faces immediate and irreparable injury as a result of the signing and implementation of the executive order. I find that the state has satisfied the test that it is likely to succeed on the merits of the claim, which would entitle them to relief. I find that the balance of equities favor the states. And lastly, I find that a temporary restraining order is in the public interest. If I were to apply the Ninth Circuit's alternative test, I would find that the states have established a serious question going to the merits, and that the balance of equities tips sharply in their favor. As such, I find that the court should and will grant the temporary restraining order.
Let me ask about the, I'll call just religious discrimination claim to reach both the Equal Protection and Establishment Clause claims. And I'm not entirely persuaded by the argument, if only because the seven countries encompass only a relatively small percentage of Muslims. I mean, do you have any information as to what percentage or what proportion of the adherents to Islam worldwide are citizens or residents of those countries? My quick penciling suggests it's something less than 15%.
I have not done that math, Your Honor, but to be clear...
And given that all those countries are countries that have been previously tagged as subjects of concern about terrorism, granted it's because of perhaps radical Islam sects, so there might be a religious motivation behind the terrorism, but I have trouble understanding why we're supposed to infer religious animus when, in fact, the vast majority of Muslims would not be affected as residents of those nations, and where the concern for terrorism with those connected with radical Islamic sects is kind of hard to deny.
Your Honor, the case law from this court and the Supreme Court is very clear that to prove religious discrimination, we do not need to prove that this order harms only Muslims or that it harms every Muslim. We just need to prove that it was motivated in part by a desire to harm Muslims. And we have alleged that...
How do you infer that desire if, in fact, the vast majority of Muslims are unaffected?
Well, Your Honor, in part, you can infer it from intent evidence. I mean, there are statements that we've quoted in our complaint that are rather shocking evidence of intent to discriminate against Muslims, given that we haven't even had any discovery yet.
All right, it comes down to the fundamental question you first heard, activist justice. You know, Ann Coulter had a great column about this today. A maniac is running our foreign policy, and it's not Trump. If only we were able to deport citizens, we could use Trump's new policy of excluding those who are hostile towards our country to get rid of Judge Robart. You know, for me, it's always been a very, very simple equation. On the legal side of this, you have the issue. Does the president have the legal authority to do what he did? And the answer is 1,000% yes. The code is simple. The code is whenever the president finds that entry of any aliens or any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary suspend the entry of all aliens, any class of aliens as immigrants, non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem appropriate. And by the way, if you look at the last five presidents, Ronald Reagan did this five times. In other words, executive authority to exclude aliens. In other words, the law that I just read you, 8 U.S.C. 1182, which was cited in the hearing. Then you have George Herbert Walker Bush one time, Bill Clinton 12 times, George W. Bush six times, and Obama 19 times. 19 times. Including, you could argue, by definition of the media, a religious litmus test or a Muslim ban, which was never true, and it is just part of a media lie that is advancing forward. But the question is fundamental and it's simple. Does the president have the authority? Yes. The second question is, if he has the authority, which he clearly does, then what is his decision here? That after Obama and Congress and he have deemed these seven nations to be hotbeds of terrorism and terroristic training camps, that it is in the best interest of the United States to vet those people that we are generously allowing access to our country to go through a little inconvenience of vetting for the greater good and safety and security of citizens that do have constitutional rights. And fundamentally, that's it. And the issue before the court is, did the judge in this case, Robart in Seattle, and talking about the Ninth Circuit, do they go beyond what their authority and powers are? And the answer to that is clear. Christian Adams is with us. He's the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation, editor of PJ Media, and Hans von Spakovsky is with us, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Hans, good to talk to you, my friend. I'm a big fan, follow your writings often with the Heritage Foundation, and find you extremely bright and interesting.
Well, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that.
Tell me your take on it, and if I'm wrong on any point here.
No, in fact, you'd make a better judge than the judge out in Washington State. Listen, in his entire 6 pages of his order granting an injunction, never once does he mention the statute that you just talked about, which is the relevant statute. The executive order itself says this is what it's based on. And while that order has been getting all of the media attention, the media has not been covering the fact that on the very same day that the Washington State judge issued that injunction, a judge in Massachusetts, another judge in an almost identical case, refused to an injunction. Why? Because he said that statute provides the president with all the authority he needs to do exactly what he did. So that judge in Washington is acting far beyond his power and, in fact, isn't following the rule of law.
You know, and can't we take it, Hans, a step further? I mean, isn't the first and main role of a president to serve as the commander-in-chief of the country?
Oh, absolutely. And look, the Supreme Court itself has said the zenith of the government's power is at the border when it decides who and what is allowed into the country. That is where its power is at its strongest. And that's why it's just ridiculous that a federal judge is stopping this and substituting his judgment for the judgment of the president on a matter that affects the national security and foreign policy of the United States.
Yeah, agreed. Well said. Christian Adams, your thoughts.
Sean, there is no constitutional right for an alien to enter the United States. The Constitution gives Congress absolute authority on this point, and Congress has delegated that authority to the president in absolute terms. I mean, this shows what happens when an out-of-control judiciary is matched with an out-of-control left-wing legal apparatus that brings lawsuits to basically make America less safe over and over again. It's a dangerous situation. Trump was right. He had the power to do it. The courts are not acting in the interest of the American people.
You know, you just said something very deep and profound, and a point that I've been trying to make, and I think you said it in a much better way than I have. And what I've been doing is I've been pointing out this finding by the Washington Free Beacon, which I thought was a great catch on their part. And that is that there was a big meeting with David Brock and all these big Democratic donors at a swanky resort in Florida. And they were mapping out how to kick Donald Trump's ass, their words, not mine. Anyway, they attended the retreat and they came up with Democracy Matters, a strategic plan of action. And it outlines and contains information how to defeat Trump through impeachment and win the midterm elections in 2018 and, quote, filing lawsuits against the Trump administration. Now, you talk about this partnership. You have a left-wing judiciary and you have a left-wing activist group of people that are out judge shopping. And correct me if you disagree with this. I believe that Seattle was not by accident. I think the Ninth Circuit is not by accident, that it's all by design. And I think we could probably expect a lot of the Ninth Circuit states to be the states where lawsuits are filed.
Well, that's right. That's right, Sean. The left, the Soros-funded left, has used the courts as a political tool. When they can't win elections, they send high-paid lawyers, often with the help of big law firms doing it for free, to the courts to get their policies enacted that most Americans disagree with. If you read anything about this judge, anything at all about his biography, you know that he was the perfect draw for the open borders crowd to get Trump.
Oh, you mean the guy that cited Black Lives Matter, the group that said, what do we want, dead cops, when do we want them now, and pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, the guy that cited them?
That's exactly right. You forum shop for the right judge, and you get your radical open borders policy adopted despite the will of Congress, the will of the American people, and the proper order of the president.
Let me go to the issue. Oh, go ahead, Christian.
Sean, I just should say, look, you're absolutely right that they're going to use the courts, because remember, California recently announced that the state was hiring who? Eric Holder, the former attorney general, to lead the fight against the Trump administration on everything from immigration to elsewhere. Look, they have a state attorney general's office with 4,500 employees, including many lawyers, and yet they are spending a fortune to hire Eric Holder to litigate against the Trump administration.
Well, let me just, you know, I want to deal with the dishonesty of the media, fake news, this, you know, Chuck Todd saying that this is a religious test, and so many people reporting that this is a Muslim ban, and it even came up in arguments. And even the Ninth Circuit judge in this case, which is known for its liberal advocacy and judicial activism, even he said, by my own estimation, 85% of the world's Muslims are not included here. For example, Afghanistan, Albania, Algeria, Azerbaijan, Bahrain, Bangladesh with 156.1 million Muslims, Brunei, Egypt, 94.6 million, Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim majority population at 258.3 million Muslims, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Kosovo, Kuwait, Lebanon, Malaysia, Mali, Morocco, Niger, Oman, Qatar, Pakistan with 201.9 million Muslims, Saudi Arabia, Senegal, and I can keep going. And yet the media constantly, repetitively, so dishonestly reports it at either A, a religious litmus test, or B, a Muslim ban.
Well, that is true, Sean, but look, it's even worse than that. If you read the executive order, there's a paragraph in it in which the president says priority will be given to any individuals who are being persecuted because of their religious beliefs, and they are a religious minority in whatever country they are in. Notice that that is totally neutral with respect to religions and is pure common sense. If you're going to be persecuted...
All right, Christian, hang on to that thought. I'll get right back to you when we get back. I hope you understand. I'm through the constraints of time here. And then we have Hans is going to stay over with us as well.
Bringing jobs back to America and getting America back to work. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, as we continue, we've got Christian Adams, president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation, editor of PJ Media. Hans von Spakovsky is with us, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Christian, I had to interrupt you mid-sentence. I apologize. Pick it up from where you were.
Look, this is obviously a product of the institutional left's hatred of anybody who wants to keep America safe. They have the courts in their pocket. They have ABC, NBC, CBS, The Washington Post, The New York Times. All of these organizations have no credibility. They're a tool of the institutional left. They'll say anything that hurts conservative constitutionalists. It's what they do. They don't even intend to be non-partial. They're all in. And what we have now is a president who's under attack by these tools, and just for protecting the country. That's what makes it particularly sickening.
That, you know, I said, and I know I've got brushback on this, but if anybody comes in this interim period where you have the legal, as Ann Coulter, I think, rightly described today, a maniac, a judge that has no constitutional authority running our foreign policy, if anyone comes in from any of these seven countries that could have been vetted and they end up killing Americans, I'm sorry, the Democrats and all these judges and everybody involved will have blood on their hands. Hans, is that accurate?
Oh, it sure is. And look, we have a specific instance of a failure of vetting that resulted in more than a dozen Americans killed, and that's the San Bernardino terrorist attacks, the Arab man and his wife. The Obama administration had a policy of not checking Facebook, social media on people they were letting in. They let the wife in. She participated in this terrorist murder spree. And if they had checked her social media, it was full of jihadist propaganda and warnings. And that resulted directly.
But Hans, isn't it even worse than that? I've seen a list of, I think, 70 some odd people. I don't have the exact number of foreign nationals. And the judge Robart in the Seattle case where this originated just said, I've heard of nothing since 9/11. Can you name of an instance? They've got 76 foreign nationals that we were able to name and identify that, in fact, have been involved in these types of crimes, correct?
Yeah, no, that is exactly right.
It's pretty scary. All right, so the bottom line here is, you know, does it not put into full focus the importance of Neil Gorsuch,
Christian. And what did you make of Blumenthal saying that Gorsuch was critical of Donald Trump, who nominated him to the Supreme Court, for being critical of the judiciary?
It was hearsay. Blumenthal said something Gorsuch, we don't know whether or not he said, and he probably didn't. We know that CNN and ABC and everybody else repeated the lie, the hearsay, about what Gorsuch said. But, Sean, it shows you how important the Supreme Court is to everything. Our borders, our integrity of our elections, how we relate to the federal government, our Second Amendment rights. The Supreme Court is the whole ballgame, and that's why Trump, among other reasons, won the White House, because Americans understand the threat to liberty and the role that five justices play in preserving
it. Last question, because I'm running out of time. Hans, are you confident Neil Gorsuch is the originalist, like Scalia, that we've been told he is?
Well, if you base it on the prior opinions he's written in the more than 10 years that he's been a Court of Appeals judge, yeah, he would seem to be. Hopefully he won't be one of those Republican judges who moves to the left when they get on the bench, which unfortunately, as you know, has been a problem.
Listen, John Roberts, well, he's not as bad as David Souter, but you're right. All right, I guess you never do know, right, until they get there. But it seems on paper, you're right. Thank you both for being with us. Appreciate it. When we come back, he is the best, the brightest, the smartest guy when it comes to America and its path towards energy independence in the country, John Hofmeister. He's the former CEO of Shell Oil. He'll join us next, and then our News Roundup Information Overload Hour.
In just 8 years, we've halved our dependence on foreign oil. We've doubled our renewable energy. We've led the world to an agreement that has the promise to save this planet. But without bolder action, our children won't have time to debate the existence of climate change. They'll be busy dealing with its effects. More environmental disasters, more economic disruptions, waves of climate refugees seeking sanctuary.
This is with regard to the construction of the Keystone Pipeline, something that's been in dispute, and it's subject to a renegotiation of terms by us. We're going to renegotiate some of the terms, and if they'd like, we'll see if we can get that pipeline built. A lot of jobs, 28,000 jobs, great construction jobs. Okay, Keystone Pipeline. This is with respect to the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Dakota Access Pipeline. Again, subject to terms and conditions to be negotiated by us. Okay. This is construction of pipelines in this country. We are, and I am, very insistent that if we're going to build pipelines in the United States, the pipe should be made in the United States. So unless there's difficulty with that, because companies are going to have to sort of gear up, much pipeline is bought from other countries. From now on, we're going to start making pipeline in the United States. We build it in the United States. We build the pipelines. We want to build the pipe. Going to put a lot of workers, a lot of steel workers, back to work. Okay. We will build our own pipeline. We will build our own pipes. That's what it has to do with. Like we used to in the old days.
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour. Sean Hannity Show. Our toll-free telephone number we'll get to coming up shortly, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. Now, there's President Obama claiming, oh, we've cut our dependence on foreign oil in half, and we've moved on to green energy. And all I can think of is all the wasted money, quote, stimulus money, the billions and billions and billions of crony dollars that went to companies like Solyndra and everybody else. And then, of course, real action, not talk. Keystone Pipeline moves forward. The Dakota Pipeline moves forward. And, of course, the president, I think, very, very smartly and very cleverly saying that, yeah, let's make the pipe here in America. Anyway, joining us now, he is probably the smartest guy on the issue of energy and the move towards energy independence in the country. And he was featured in the movie Pump. He's the former CEO of Shell Oil and founder of the group Citizens for Affordable Energy. John Hofmeister is back with us. How are you, sir? Good to talk to you.
Doing fine, Sean. Thank you for the opportunity.
Is it really true that you took till November 6th to figure out who you're voting for?
Yeah.
A little birdie told me.
I gave it the full scope and scale of the electoral process. Big, important decision. And the country hinged on, I think, the vote. And I did take the entire time because I wanted to fully vet both candidates, make sure I could do what my conscience told me I should do.
Well, and you voted for Donald Trump, obviously. Did the president...
I voted for Donald Trump after agonizing...
How could you agonize over that decision knowing what Trump was saying about energy and knowing that Hillary was going to be worse than Obama?
Well, there's a long history to the Clintons and energy, and I was in part relying upon that long history rather than on the rhetoric of the heated campaign trail. But in the end, I decided on Donald Trump, and I'm glad I did.
Right. Let me ask you this. Did President Obama tell us the truth when he said we have halved our dependence on foreign oil, or is that like him lying about creating jobs and creating a perception with lower unemployment numbers that he did such a great job creating jobs when we have the lowest labor participation rate and more Americans out of work since the 1970s, and we have 13 million more Americans on food stamps and 8 million more Americans in poverty. He lied about the economy. Was he lying about energy?
In the pre-shale days, Sean, this is before the shale revolution took over, the United States of America was down to nearly below 6 million barrels of production per day of domestic oil in a country that needs about 18 million. With the shale formations, and I will tell you, Barack Obama did absolutely nothing, nothing. His administration did nothing to help the shale transformation. That was industry-led, and it was state-led. States like North Dakota, Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, the state agencies were the ones who did all the work, and the EPA, the national EPA, and the National Energy Department and others did nothing. But we have moved from less than 6 million barrels per day production. We moved as high as 9.2 million barrels per day domestic production. So, yes, technically his statistic is correct. And for him to take credit for it is the ultimate in hypocrisy because he did nothing to support it. I went to the White House. I tried to talk to the people at the White House about shale and about domestic drilling. I was shut down every time I tried.
Well, we did have a revolution, and you and I both worked at trying to help put people together with jobs in North Dakota and in Texas and in Oklahoma, and we had a lot of success. Am I right in my theory that OPEC and the Saudis in particular purposely drove down the price of a barrel of oil for the distinct purpose of driving American companies out of business?
I think it's more nuanced than that. And you may, let me just explain it this way. The Saudis were grossly distressed by the United States and its lack of support for Saudi Arabia in the Middle East. From Franklin Roosevelt in World War II all the way to George W. Bush, there was an agreement between the Saudis and the Americans. We'll produce our oil, you'll have our back. Well, during the Obama years, Obama demonstrated he did not have their back. They were on their own. So I would say the stronger reason for why the Saudis did create a man-made drop in the price of the oil was more to do damage to Iran and to Russia than to the United States. But the U.S., you're right, was a victim of circumstance. The U.S. shale production was mightily harmed by the geopolitical decision of Saudi Arabia to take on Iran and to take on Russia, because the U.S. walked away from Saudi Arabia. And yes, we were collateral damage, serious collateral damage, 500,000 lost jobs, and, you know, billions of dollars not spent in this country that otherwise would have been spent. But I think the real reason was fighting Iran and fighting Russia economically, which ultimately did impact the U.S. negatively.
Yeah, I agree with that. You see, I think America's commitment to energy independence has to move forward regardless of what the price of a barrel of oil may drop to, because I think that would be that type of manipulation happens for all sorts of reasons. Your theory fascinates me. I still think it was more directed at the U.S., but that maybe you do, but it's to me, it's neither here nor there. It became a reality. Here's
but
my question to you.
You're absolutely right. you're absolutely right when you say we have got to become invulnerable to the global oil price. And we can if we're determined to do so.
Well, that's my main focus. Now, the price of a barrel of oil, I didn't look at what it was today, but what is it, in the 50-some-odd dollar range now?
52 and change.
Yeah. All right. So, and what was the low? What did it drop to, 20-something?
26.
Okay. And so it would have been a good time, I guess, to buy at that point. And I knew it, but I didn't have the guts to do it. But the next thing, though, is I don't trust the stock market. I don't trust commodities. I have such a disdain for all these markets and all the manipulation goes on. And I always feel that we, the consumers, are always the last ones in, and we always get out at the wrong time, and people that think they can play the system lose. So here's what I want to ask you. If Donald Trump is committed, with the price of oil where it is today, to energy independence for this country, for national security reasons, and for the creation of jobs, knowing that energy is the lifeblood of any economy, especially our economy, how long would it take?
I think it would take about a decade, a clear decade, because here's the reason. We can produce more oil, but I think this country would max out on oil production at about 12 million barrels a day.
Because of refinery shortages?
No, just because of the risks associated and the fact that you just can't, you've got to manage production over time or you destroy the credibility of your reservoirs. You just can't overproduce. And so 12 million is probably a sweet spot. But here's where we get the other 6 to 7 million barrels a day equivalent.
Natural gas.
Natural gas as an alternative fuel for internal combustion engines. That will do it. And that's what would take the extra time for the infrastructure to be built, which is why I say 10 years, because we would need the natural gas fields to be developed. We would need the pipelines to be built. We would need refinery systems for converting natural gas to ethanol and methanol, and compressed natural gas and liquefied natural gas. And we would have to build more cars that are capable of using natural gas as well as oil.
But the conversion of the combustion engine, I know this from my time as a contractor in the 80s. When I lived in Rhode Island 5 years, John, and when I lived there, I actually had purchased a Providence Gas Company old van. And it was the best purchase I ever made. It had like 70-some-odd thousand miles, had a little bit of body damage. I ended up fixing most of it. But it was converted for all the time the Providence Gas Company had it into a gas-running engine, which is cleaner than fossil fuels, which is cleaner than gasoline. And better with emissions. And when what they did is when they would finally sell the vans, they would convert it back to gasoline because you can't get enough natural gas to fill your tank, obviously. So if they had the technology back in the 80s and I had that truck, that means the engine doesn't really need to change much, does it?
No, it doesn't. The engine is really, it's really the fueling system and the firing system that needs to change. The compression engine itself, the internal combustion engine itself, doesn't really care what it's firing on. It's just as long as it's flammable.
I want to pick up on that point, and I don't mean to rush it through here. But
up next, our final roundup and information overload hour.
As we continue, John Hofmeister is with us. He was featured in the movie Pump. He was the former CEO of Shell Oil, and he recognizes, as I do, the number of jobs that can be created by becoming an energy-independent country. He thinks we could do it in 10 years. I'm hopeful we can do it in less than that. And when we left just a moment ago, we were talking about converting the combustion engine to run on natural gas, and we are the Middle East of natural gas. We have hundreds of years of supplies. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Hofmeister. Isn't it about that much?
Yes, we have plenty of natural gas for decades
and very
centuries. Yes.
And it's clean burning, correct?
Yes, it's half the pollution of gasoline.
And it's very easy to convert a car that runs on gasoline to switch it over to natural gas and do it safely.
Well, in fact, most modern built cars actually have the capability already built in. The movie Pump Trump describes how the fueling system and the software that controls the firing system are already equipped, because in China and in Brazil, the very same companies, GM, Ford, etc., are making cars that have to be 100% ethanol compatible. And so it's just a matter of software adjustment, and so the car is ready made.
And won't it make the car last? Won't, because it's cleaner burning, isn't the likelihood of repairs, in other words, don't you reduce the likelihood of the need for repairs within the engine because of the way the natural gas functions versus traditional gasoline?
In principle, yes. It's a cleaner burn. It's a hotter burn because you're burning ethanol, high octane alcohol fuel, which is a cleaner burn because of the high octane. And depending upon the driver, if the driver's a good driver, yes, that engine should get additional lifespan.
You know, my friend was the inventor of the year a few years back, Keith Kowalski, and he has this company called Flame Spray, and he actually sprays the core of these engines so they can run at that hotter temperature that you're talking about. All right, last question. What happened when your movie Pump came out and you were advancing this notion about natural gas? You had a lot of pushback from people. What happened?
Well, we're still, you know, the movie is still out. It's a wonderful movie. You can get it off of Netflix. And it is really describing fuel choice, where you can have, in addition to gasoline or diesel, you could also have natural gas in different ways, ethanol, methanol, CNG, etc., and or hydrogen or electric battery, your choice. Driver, consumer win, consumer choice. But the pushback comes from the auto industry in part, and it comes from the oil industry in part, because guess what? They don't like the competition. And right now we're 100% oil, or nearly 100% oil products for gasoline and diesel. And so they don't like the idea of a competition. But I say, I'm an oil man. Guess which companies produce natural gas?
Oil companies. I know. It's funny. I hope you get an audience with the president, because I think he'd be as fascinated as I am to learn from you all that you know and all the knowledge you've accumulated. All right, when we come back, news roundup, information overload, the other topics, news of the day, and our top story, of course, the Ninth Circuit and the whole vetting of refugees and how necessary it is for the country. Straight ahead.
So we want to help you realize these goals by rolling back burdensome regulations, and you people are regulated probably as much as almost anybody, although I can think of a couple of industries that are even worse. Lowering the overall tax burden on American businesses, big league, that's coming along very well. We're way ahead of schedule, I believe, and we're going to be announcing something, I would say, over the next 2 or 3 weeks that will be phenomenal in terms of tax.
I just want to introduce Brian Krzanich, who's the CEO of Intel, a great, great company. And Brian called a few weeks ago and said we want to do a very big announcement having to do with our country, but also having to do mostly with Arizona and the jobs and the great technology that will be produced. So this is Brian. And Brian, why don't you say a few words and maybe also talk about the product you're going to be making. It's amazing.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President, for this. It's an honor to be here today representing Intel and to be able to announce our $7 billion investment in our newest, most advanced factory, Fab 42, in Chandler, Arizona. And we'll be completing that factory to make the most advanced 7-nanometer semiconductor chips on the planet. Intel is very proud of the fact that the majority of our manufacturing is here in the U.S., and the majority of our research and development is here in the U.S., while over 80% of what we sell is sold outside of the U.S. They were consistently one of the top 5 exporters in the country and one of the top 2 research and development spenders in the United States. And we've been able to do that even while the regulatory and tax policies have disadvantaged us in the past relative to the competition we have across the world. And Fab 42 is an investment in Intel, but also the U.S.'s future in innovation and leadership in the semiconductor industry. And Fab 42 will employ approximately 3,000 direct, high-paying, high-wage, high-tech jobs at its peak, and over 10,000 people in the Arizona area in support of the factory. And this factory will produce, as I said, the most powerful computer chips on the planet, powering the best computers, the best data centers, autonomous cars. All of these devices are the most powerful computing devices on the planet. And at Intel, we have a simple saying that says, while other people predict the future, we build the future.
$7 billion going to be invested. You notice how all of these companies, go back to Carrier, go to Ford, go to Fiat Chrysler, go to the Alibaba company, go to this guy from China that's going to invest and wants to create millions of American jobs. All of these companies, they're loving meeting with the president and, announcing, we're staying. We're not going to build in Mexico. We're going to build here. We appreciate the regulations that you're going to take away. We appreciate the fact you're going to lower the corporate tax rate. We like the environment that you say you're going to create, and Donald Trump is keeping his promises. I mean, I've never seen, nor has anybody else seen, or Democrats won't admit it, but it's just a reality, a truth, and a fact. This president is moving at the speed of light. He's moving as executives move in the real world. He's making decisions like all of us make every day without going through the painful process of a bureaucracy. And of course, in the case of Democrats like Chuckie Schumer, the crybaby, obstructionists that don't want this president to succeed. You know what the greatest fear of Democrats is now? That Trump is going to be successful, that Trump is going to keep his promises. Think of where we are now. He ordered immediately the easing of burdens, the burdens of Obamacare, and is in the process of working towards repealing and replacing. And as he said, he's only going to do it when he gets it right. That might take longer, you know, or taking action to freeze pending regulations and looking to reduce regulations by 75% or higher, keeping a promise to withdraw the U.S. from TPP, keeping a promise to put a federal government hiring freeze in place, keeping a promise that no federal tax dollars will provide abortions abroad, keeping a promise on energy and five executive actions advancing Keystone and Dakota Access Pipelines, keeping a promise and issuing executive actions. And now we are in the design phase, in the beginning of the construction of the border wall, which so many, even Republicans, say, oh, he's never going to build that wall. Oh, it's being built. Or his actions on extreme vetting, which we've been fighting in the courts and discussing in detail. You know, also issuing executive action on rebuilding the military, another campaign promise. Issuing executive action on a plan to defeat ISIS that will be on his desk in about 10 days from now. Instituting a five-year lobbying ban to drain the swamp, another campaign promise. Appointing an originalist to the Supreme Court from the very list he gave us before the election, Neil Gorsuch, to the court. Now the only thing that is missing in all of this is getting the Congress to get off their backsides and move forward. Anyway, joining us now to discuss, Terry Jeffries, editor-in-chief of CNS News, Chris Hahn of the ever-expanding Chris Hahn Show, 1 hour a week on Thursdays, and
hey,
now has three affiliates.
2 hours a week.
2 hours a week, and has three affiliates nationwide, and it's going gangbusters. Did you up to five affiliates yet?
I'm up there, yeah. Plus, I'm doing some bigger stuff, Sean. I just I don't want to talk about it on this show and some of your competitors. But
wow, I'm sure there's a big trade secrets here that you're about to give out, but we appreciate it. You do have a good set. Even Terry Jeffries cracking up. But Terry, I mean, I know that there were these never-Trumper people. I got so disgusted with them during the election, I just stopped talking about them. You know, and I look at everything the president said he would do, he's doing. And he's moving at the, I will call it the speed of Trump, a little shock and awe for D.C. And the only thing that's frustrating me is how pathetically lame and slow Republicans are in D.C.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sean. I think, first of all, President Trump is doing an outstanding job. He is sticking by his campaign promises, which are great promises. And if he is able to follow through on them, he will be a great president. And to do that, he needs the cooperation of the Republicans in Congress. They got to be as tough as he is. They got to fight for the things he's fighting for. And, you know, some of the things you've talked about, these are dealing with long-term negative trends we've seen in the United States of America that President Trump is going to try and reverse. For example, with that Intel clip you're playing, and they're going to invest money in Arizona and create jobs in Arizona, and they're going to export products from the United States to other countries. We just found out that when President Trump took office, we had completed 41 straight years of trade deficits. 41
By the way, I read your piece on this. That's, and you got that data published by the Census Bureau.
Correct. And, Sean, during that same time when we had 41 straight years of trade deficits, what was happening to the middle class and working class in America? We were losing manufacturing jobs. We got to the point where more people were working. More than 9 million more people are working for government than working for manufacturing. And the median income of people who graduated from high school but didn't go to college was declining in real terms. So and they were also being hurt by the fact that illegal alien labor was coming into the United States and undercutting their wages, as well as U.S. corporations bringing their manufacturing overseas and hiring labor over there. So President Trump is working on reversing those major trends. We need them reversed. The Republican Congress needs to support him in doing that job.
Got
to
correct all the problems that Reagan caused back in the 80s, basically. Because
are we really going to go back? Is this where you want to go? Because Reagan created 21. Let me give you the numbers. Because Reagan created 21 million new jobs. Reagan gave us the longest period of peacetime economic growth in history. Some quarters as high as 8% and 9% GDP growth. Obama never hit 3% in any year. The only president in history never to hit 3% GDP growth ever. Reagan doubled the revenue to the federal government. So, you know, let's cut your nonsense here and let's get to the facts and the issues today. Even you should be inspired by Donald Trump's, you know, cutting through the BS bureaucracy and keeping his promises.
So he mentioned the trade deficit, which took off during Reagan. We all know that.
When
Reagan created those jobs, most of them were government jobs because he tripled the size of government, tripled the size of the debt. And yeah, these are lasting problems that have been compounded by future presidents.
You know, that's not true. I mean, if you look at the actual data, the trade deficits are bigger now. The manufacturing element of the trade deficit is bigger now. As Sean pointed out, we just had the first president in recorded history who never saw a year of 3% growth. We've had 11 years, a record 11 years in which the U.S. economy has not grown by as much as 3%. Ronald Reagan did much more than that in many years, and he had to work with a Democratic House of Representatives every single year he was in office, and he had to go to the American people and defeat a Democratic House of Representatives to get his policies in place, including the policies, by the way, that won the Cold War during that period. We no longer face a Cold War. There isn't a Soviet Union looking to hegemonize the entire world. But we have these problems that President Trump is going to face, and he has a Republican Congress. So the real issue now, as Sean pointed out, is are the Republicans in Congress going to have the moral courage to do the things that need to be done that President Trump is trying to do that will reverse these long-term trends in American society that are not traceable to Ronald Reagan?
I wonder how Reagan would feel about his policies towards Russia. I just wonder. I don't think he'd be too happy with them.
And Ronald Reagan, by the way, Ronald Reagan went to the Berlin Wall and he said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, because he believed it was possible that he could appeal to the conscience even of Gorbachev to actually roll back from the Soviet designs on not only controlling Europe, but in controlling the entire planet. Reagan had diplomatic relations with the Soviet Union the entire time he was president, as did every single other post-World War II U.S. president.
He never capitulated to the Soviet Union, which is what is appearing to be happening now.
He beat the Soviet Union. Trump isn't dealing with the Soviet Union.
I hear you. I agree with you that he beat the Soviet Union. He didn't capitulate to the Soviet Union. He was
What do you think about Barack Obama trying to make a free trade deal with communist Vietnam? Are you in favor of that?
He didn't feel that the Soviet Union or Russia as it is today had the moral equivalency of what we do in this United States of America. So I think Reagan will be very disappointed with some of the things he's heard over the last couple of weeks.
Well, I don't think that Donald Trump thinks the Russians or the Russian regime is the moral equivalent of the United States of America.
It's exactly what he said on Super Bowl Sunday. Maybe you don't watch football, but he did say that on the Super Bowl. So
stay right there. We got to take a break. We'll come back. I'll let you guys finish this on the other side of the break. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll get to your calls at the bottom of the hour.
Fighting the Trump-hating liberal media one day at a time. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, that was from earlier today. We'll get into this more at the bottom of the hour. Protesters in literally trying to stop law enforcement vans from leaving a U.S. immigration office in Phoenix. It's more of the snowflake superstorm. Chris, I'm sure you're proud of them. I'm sure you're proud of Madonna and Ashley Judd and Ashton Kutcher and Meryl Streep and even Chucky Schumer that said and cried on TV, even though he himself supported banning Iraqis from coming into America. And a year ago, said he didn't have a problem with a temporary ban, and he called the president un-American. I think even you have to be a little disgusted by your own fringe and your party.
I'm not disgusted at all. I think that what we're seeing here reminds me of what we saw in 2009, except for there's a lot more people involved in it, and they are actually using real facts and not alternative facts to make their protests known. So I think this is a great thing. I think that conservatives are going to try to paint this as something nefarious, which is what you're doing in this clip. But I think that
Do you think a woman that's here in the country illegally that is guilty of identity theft, which can ruin people's lives for years, should be deported?
I have no problem with deporting people who are.
Should that woman be deported?
Crimes.
Yeah. Right. Why did Chuck Schumer in 2015 support a temporary ban on refugees? And why now does he say it's un-American? Is that politics, Chris?
Ban in 2015 was a
he supported a temporary ban in 2015.
Yeah.
He supported Obama's ban of Iraqis for 6 months, and now he says it's un-American. Is he a hypocrite?
Real facts on
is
what
he
happened
a hip-
in
I'm
that
asking,
ban.
Is he a hypocrite?
No, he is absolutely not, because you're comparing an apple to an orange.
No, a ban is a ban, and he said he supported a temporary ban of refugees.
There was a real situation going on with specific types of people that were banned in that
All right.
ban.
Let me ask Terry Jeffrey, is Chuck Schumer, the crybaby, the biggest hypocrite in Congress?
He's one of the biggest hypocrites. There's so many big hypocrites over there, Sean, it'd be hard to determine who's the biggest. But he may be the biggest in a senior position in the United States Senate right now. And I'll tell you another element of the hypocrisy is we have the Islamic State perpetrating genocide against Christians and other religious minorities in Syria and also in that part of Iraq they control. And yes, they cornered the United States Senate into unanimously agreeing that that was the case last year. And now you have President Trump put out an executive order that says if you are a member of a persecuted religious minority, then you ought to get priority in getting refugee status to the United States. And what do these liberals come out and say? They say this bias against Muslims. The fact of the matter is, if you're a Shia Muslim being targeted by Islamic State in Syria, you would qualify under Trump's order. But so too would Catholics and Orthodox Christians, who apparently these
Good
Democrats
point.
Do not want to help save.
Well, it's 99%. We know that the refugees coming into the country under Obama were Muslim. All right, we got to leave it there. When we come back, your calls are straight ahead.
Stop it. This is wrong!
All right, that's the standoff at the ICE office in Phoenix. Protesters blocking the deportation of an illegal immigrant. Now, what do we know about the illegal immigrant? Well, we know the person is being deported, but why? What does the woman do? As I've been telling you, police made several arrests of protesters who were blocking the enforcement vans from leaving the immigration office in Phoenix, fearing that a mother of two was headed for deportation. And the protests surged at the Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility when Guadalupe Garcia de Reyes was taken into custody during a routine check-in with the agency, according to media reports. The activist said it was an attempt by President Donald Trump to deport immigrants living in the country illegally. Now, fearing that she would return to Mexico, they went and blocked the gates. But what they're not telling you here, and I think they probably should, is the woman was convicted of identity theft. Do you know how awful identity theft is? Why is LifeLock one of our main sponsors? Why do they do so well? Because identity theft is America's fastest growing crime. Go to LifeLock.com. You lose your identity, people become you. They literally rob you blind. They use your credit cards. They can rob your retirement accounts, your bank accounts, your life savings. And then getting your good name back is next to impossible. I know people that have spent years and years trying to fix the damage because of identity theft. Anyway, let's get back to our busy telephones here as we say hi to Joe, who is in Brookhaven, New York. Joe, how are you? And we're glad you called, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Hannity. It's an honor. I want to talk about Senator Schumer. I am so mortified and embarrassed that he's my representative.
But you see, you're like me. I live in New York. And by the way, you have more of a New York accent than even Linda. Let's talk about it, Linda. Let's get some coffee.
I know, you think I grew up out in Suffolk County, but that's my parents.
That's where I grew up, too. No worries, brother. I love it. Yeah. That's fine. So, I love all accents, actually.
Me and my wife were watching it, and he's crying. I couldn't believe it. I said, they're cutting heads off over there. They're killing the Christians. They're murdering the terrorists. Imagine the terrorists watching this, and this guy's crying. Can I say wussy? Am I allowed to say that on the air?
Yeah, you could say whatever you want.
I hope that, all right. But this man, they're using the word unhinged between him and Elizabeth Warren and that Cory Booker, but we won't even go there. But what about our military over there? Listen, watching this, you imagine how these commander Marines out there in the army, they're overseas. And this is what they're saying from the representative back. He's crying over a couple of refugees. I am so proud of Mr. Trump. Let Mr. Trump know that the 61 million or whatever that voted for him, we're still here. We haven't gone anywhere. Don't worry, Mr. Trump. Keep stopping them. Thank God Mr. Sessions is in. Let's keep them out. He's doing a great job. He's so unhinged. Then I see him. Then we're watching it again in a couple of nights.
You got to understand, we're like political orphans. We don't have representation. And what a phony hypocrite Chuck Schumer is.
Senator, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Lee Zeldin, Congressman Lee Zeldin, he's got our backs. He actually wrote me a letter back when I told him about this. My friend told me we're in a sanctuary county. So I said, what? And DeMarco, the sheriff, just changed it in December because I called the Brookhaven Town Hall. They said, you got to call so I called up to the governor's office and I got the representative there and she goes, well, you have to put it in writing, sir, for a response. I said, you telling me we're a sanctuary state? She says, well, you know his feelings. I said, are you kidding me? So I want to know something. Where is the money going from these refugees? Sean, 330 million. Let me finish the point. 330 million Americans about that, right? We can't find educated people. We have to go to Iran, India, everywhere else. Who's paying for their college from the girl from Stony Brook? Follow the money. Who's paying for them?
Listen. You got to understand. And I really do appreciate your thought, your call. And we are political orphans. And I think it's important that we recognize that.
Yeah, but no more. But Mr. Trump got elected.
I'm saying, and I'm making a point here. But when you add up, and I appreciate the call, when you add up the cost to the educational system in this country, New York especially, California especially, Arizona, border states in particular, they have been brutalized, you know, and then you add up the cost of the healthcare system and the impact that you know, we're paying for all their healthcare. We pay for their education. When they go to jail, we pay for their incarceration. And the cost
are in the trillions and trillions of dollars. Americans have the right to demand accountability. We have the right to secure our borders. There's nothing wrong with defending our borders, especially when so many people are taking jobs away from Americans, when we have the lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. We have crime problems, educational costs, health care costs that we've all bearing the burden of paying for. And on top of that, then you run the added risk that, well, if somebody comes to America because they want a job, well, what about somebody crossing the border because they want to drop a bomb or whatever means of destruction and kill Americans because they think this is what their God is telling them to do. And that is a great risk to this country. The difference between me and the difference between Donald Trump and me and versus these liberals, the Democrats, the left, the lunatics out there, they don't care. They don't care if you're a victim of identity theft. They don't care about the cost, education, health care, criminal justice. They don't care about the safety and security of Americans. It's just simple, basic common sense. They're willing to gamble with your life. I'm not willing to do that. They're willing to say, well, we can't inconvenience a few visitors. I'm sorry if you're a guest in our house and we have a problem and it's called radical jihadists at war with America. We have the right to know that you're not one of them. And that's just basic, simple, common sense. And all the charges of racism and Chucky crying and un-American. Well, he wasn't crying when Obama did it some 12 times. He wasn't crying when he banned Iraqis from coming here. Was that a Muslim ban? Was that a religious litmus test? Because using their logic, it would be called that. He wasn't crying because Chuck is a hypocrite. Chuck is now given in to the radical base of the Democratic Party because they're the loudest voice. And Chuck is now going to fight on and resist and obstruct on everything he can, even though they have failed spectacularly on everything that they have tried so far. And now they're even beginning to give up. And their focus, I think, will move to Neil Gorsuch. And whether or not they like it or not, Neil Gorsuch will be on the U.S. Supreme Court. All right, let's get back to our phones. Good call. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN. As we say hi to Chuck, is in Georgia. Chuck, how are you? Glad you called.
Hey, Sean, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
I've been a fan of yours for years. I started watching you when I was 13, and now I'm 29, so I really was raised with you. You feel like part of the family.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I was listening to Rush, I should say, on Tuesday, and he was talking, he posed a question, what's the one thing that can derail Trump's agenda? And just gut instinct out loud, I audibly said, gutless GOP. And then when I was listening to your show the same day, you just gave them a tongue lashing. And I was just thinking, oh, my gosh, we are so on the same page because
I didn't
hear
what Rush said. But I will tell you, that is my great fear. Republicans will cave. Republicans are going too slow. I hope you'll watch tonight's opening monologue. And it's going to be pretty brutal. I'll tell you right now, I've been writing it all day. And I'm going right after the Republican Party. They need to get up to the speed of Trump. And if they're not willing to get up to the speed of Trump, then they need to get out of the way. And it's really unconscionable 8 years later that they don't have a consensus repeal and replace plan for Obamacare. It's unconscionable. And then to hear that that's their main focus, and then they're given a deadline at the end of the year, that means what? We're going to wait an entire year till corporations can repatriate trillions and we lower the corporate tax rate to incentivize corporations to hire people? You know, the people that have been suffering 8 years that have no jobs, the people that have been suffering in poverty and on food stamps, the American economy, which has been stagnant and bordering on recession the whole 8 years, we deserve better. And these people need to get off of their asses and go to work. And going to work means staying up late, writing bills, getting it right, and doing what they promised. And I have no patience for the speed at which they're going, and there's no sense of urgency, which I think we have every right to demand from them.
And they seem to be too afraid of the media and pop culture to have the same guts that Donald Trump has, and the American voter put him in for a reason, and we want them to fall in line, or we will be all too happy to get rid of him.
Yep.
Listen, I appreciate it. But Ken, that is my opening monologue tonight on Hannity. And it's really important. And I think we've got to put these guys on notice. They really need a kick in the ass. You know, I like to move at the speed of Trump. And you think about it in your own life, and I just, my crew and I here have been talking about this a lot for the last 3 days. And I know the schedule of Congress. I mean, they're off like 150 days a year. I'm like, I barely get 2 weeks vacation at the end of the year, and I crawl to the finish line at the end of every year. And I don't want extra time off. It's not my nature. I'm not the big take a vacation guy and lay on the beach. You know, when my family goes to a beach, I never go there. I can't stand sitting there for hours. It drives me nuts. And I just, you know, these guys have their expensive lunches every day, and they do a lot of talk. I don't know anybody in their own business. There's not one person, radio or TV, that works for me that takes a lunch every day. Every single person I know has their lunch at their desk. And in New York, you're kind of lucky because they'll deliver it right to your building. Whatever you want to eat, it gets delivered right there. And it is beyond frustrating to me that they don't have the urgency that all of us have in our daily jobs. We don't have the luxury of going to lunch. We don't have the luxury of putting our feet up. I'll take a glass of Merlot with that, sir. It drives me insane. When I worked in restaurants and I was a dishwasher, I had to move my ass when I was 12 years old. A cook at 13, I had to move. A busboy, I ran. I sweated all night. And it's the same being a waiter and a bartender. On a busy night, I wouldn't stop for 10 hours. I wouldn't have a second to breathe. And it's the same in my construction business. I'd stay till 2 in the morning. I'd be back at 7:30. And they don't have that urgency. They're not in touch with how Americans live, work, and how everybody else has deadlines and urgency. Get your ass in gear. And I'm talking to Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan in particular. Guys, get moving. Stay at the speed of Trump. Get it done now. We've been waiting for years. Stop with the excuses. Go to work like the American people go to work every day. It's such a disconnect.
All the breaking news with the analysis to help you make sense of it all. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
Going to wrap things up for today. All right, tonight on Hannity, I hope you'll record my opening monologue because I'm directing it right at Republicans in the House and the Senate. And I'm not talking about all of them, especially the Freedom Caucus and guys like Louie Gohmert and Pete Sessions and Marsha Blackburn that are not in the Freedom Caucus. There are people that want to work and get things done. But I'm tired of the lack of urgency to fix the country. And these guys need to get up to the speed of Trump. So we have Michelle Malkin on that, the latest on the extreme vetting battle that's going on. More media bias. It shouldn't shock you. And wait till you hear about a poll that shows more Americans trust Trump than the news media. Interesting. Also, the left-wing hypocrisy. We'll go to the protests that took place in Arizona. And that's all coming up 10 Eastern tonight. Hannity on Fox. I hope you'll record the opening monologue. Send it to your congressman and your senator. 10 Eastern tonight. Thanks for being with us. Back here tomorrow.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. If you're in a situation where you feel threatened, well, instinct, that might drive you to reach for a lethal means immediately. But we all want to avoid the irreversible consequences of using deadly force. Now, enter the Byrna, less lethal pistol launcher. It is equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammo. It can incapacitate any attacker for up to 40 minutes. It's legal in all 50 states. It requires no background checks. And it can be shipped right to your door. Go to their website, byrna.com/Hannity right now, and you'll get 10% off. Hollywood is under siege from an external force. Now, the same Hollywood that sold the American dream, they are now making nightmares a reality. Many major films make choices to appease the Chinese Communist Party to be distributed in China. Now you can join Tiffany Meyer, an investigative reporter, in the Hollywood Takeover brought to you by the Epoch Times, where she reveals how the CCP exerts control over some of the major studios. Now don't miss the most important documentary about Hollywood yet. And for a limited time, you can watch the first 10 minutes for free at HollywoodTakeover.com/Sean, S-E-A-N. Hey, we're all looking to save, especially on medical bills, but where do you start? Now, unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings, well, it can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance, and they flag errors like overbilling or wrong codes and fraud. And you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, saving starts with knowing where to look. Go to their website. It's healthlock.com today before you see any other healthcare provider.